This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 262 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
If you've been listening to the show, you've heard us talk about Framebridge. They make it super easy and affordable to frame your favorite things, from art prints to posters to the travel photos sitting on your phone. Here's how it works. Just go to framebridge.com and upload your photo, or they'll send you packaging to safely mail in your physical pieces.
You can preview your item online in any frame style, choose your favorite, or get free recommendations from their talented designers. The expert team at Framebridge will custom frame your item and deliver your finished piece directly to your home, ready to hang.
Instead of the hundreds you'd pay at a framing store, their prices start at $39 and all shipping is free. Plus, our listeners will get 15% off their first order at framebridge.com when they use our code Outlander. So we've also talked about it. We'll mention it again briefly. Like, we've gotten some beautiful stuff from Framebridge. Both were pictures taken on our last Pod Abroad trip in May of 2018. One, of course, was the beautiful trio of Scottish Highland baby coos. And the other was a photo of, or I guess a double selfie, Summer and myself in one frame. I think it was her.
I think you were photobombing my selfie.
Was I? No, you asked me, girl. We were at the gardens at Dunvegan Castle, yeah, on the Isle of Skye. And it was, of course, crazy beautiful. But, it was, you can take 100 selfies and like maybe get one or two good ones, right? Well, we went through a few photos and found one and we thought, you know what? I don't mind this. And Summer's like, I don't mind that. I look decent. I feel okay. So let's do it. So yeah, it was a selfie and it was not a small shot of our faces. It was pretty close. It wasn't like up our noses, but it was decently close. And we chose that as one of the ones to get Framebridge done. And we got this huge photo of our faces.
And we gave it as a Father/Mother's Day present to the rents, and I'm sure they appreciate it. Who doesn't want giant, larger than life size pictures of their kids on the wall?
The framing, the matting, the setting of it was so professionally done, so beautiful, immaculate. We would go back in a heartbeat.
Get started today. Frame your photos or send the perfect gift for weddings, birthdays, and special events. Go to framebridge.com and use promo code Outlander. You'll save an additional 15% off your first order.
Just go to framebridge.com, promo code Outlander. That's framebridge.com, promo code Outlander. Okay. We are here at the Outlander podcast once again. Very excited to have kind of an old friend now on the show.
Bless you, the old.
Not old, but we've known you for more than a minute.
Oh, it's true enough, huh?
It's good. I know, but we all are getting older, but it's a good, it's a good thing.
I think he's the baby of the crew.
Really? Aye.
Yeah. So how has everything been going, Aga?
Oh, all right. Absolutely knackering. But no bad. How are yourselves? How you doing since your return to the West?
Like in May?
Aye.
I'm still recovering.
We're still recovering. Not from that. We had about a month off. From travel.
Nice.
And then in July we were at Comic-Con, and then 2 weeks later turned around and went back to Philadelphia. So now we're back, and I think for the most part home for the next
a few months.
Yes, nice again. We're very happy about that. But we will get to be speaking of travel, but yourself, your family, everyone's health, everyone's doing well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Grand.
Good. Mm-hmm. And so tell us, what have you been doing? I don't think we've chatted since like 20. Has it been 2015 when we did the Pod Abroad with Summer and I.
Oh, aye. Oh, right enough, because there was... Aye, we had the pod cask, didn't
yes.
we?
Yes, yes.
Aye.
And I'm not sure that we had you on after that.
We're not. That's shocking, isn't it? Oh, well, we'll put it right now. gosh. Right, let me get this straight. Are you seriously asking me what I've been up to? Oh, I would have no idea where to start with that whatsoever.
Okay, well, let's back up. Let's back up a tiny bit in case people, hopefully people know that you are or have been connected with the Outlander series in that you have been their Scottish Gaelic consultant.
For the last 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is. Now it's... deeply frightening statistic, but it's 5 years now.
That's fantastic. So in case you are new to the series and new to our show and you haven't listened to our other interviews with Agav or about this, that is the connection. That is how we first reached out to him. And so since then, since making that connection and since working with the show, you've been able to do more things that are closer to your heart, that are more historically, societally, community, and personally important to you. How have you been able to leverage not just your work with the show, but that's definitely an important part of it? How have you been able to leverage what you have been doing into kind of what you're doing now?
Well, I was actually thinking just the other day when it crossed my mind that it was 5 years since I started working for the show, and you'll probably remember our very first interview together. I mean, I was still caught up in the absolute whirlwind of season one, you know, which even looking back now, it's possible to be quite nostalgic about it, and it was only 5 years ago. It was absolutely frenetic. It was chaos in the best possible way. And as my involvement with the show has just sort of gradually dipped over the years as other kind of things come in. I mean, they've got Cherokee and Mohawk to worry about now. So I think the idea of having three challenging languages involved is probably too much for anybody to be bothered with. So, you know, the Gaelic language has slipped out of focus a bit. It's still there. But as my involvement has dipped, it has allowed me to refocus on all the things that I was doing before the Outlander hurricane hit, you know. And I suppose take some of the interest that has been generated from that work and use that to, I suppose, be able to set out my stall for other things. So that's been great. But the idea always was, you know, I remember when I first took the work, it was always because I saw such a fantastic opportunity for the language and culture to be showcased globally. You know, I then read the first book and realised I was working on a great story as well. But, you know, at the start, obviously, that was a byproduct. That was just a nice bonus that I actually liked the story and liked the characters. And, you know, so it was always this kind of a thing of, you know, someone's got to grab this opportunity by the horns and really squeeze everything out of it we possibly can for the language and culture. So since then, I've gone back to focusing on what some people might consider very, very esoteric things, you know, extremely specific things, very, very community-oriented things, and trying to really push the next stage of the revival of my own dialect, now that my kids are all fluent and very much aware of what their role in it is and how they can contribute to it, trying to get other people involved, trying to touch base with people all over the world who are in similar situations and open up dialogues and find out if there's anything we can teach one another about the process of what we're going through, you know, because everybody shares the journey, but, you know, sometimes people can, you know, just say things that are right out of left field about what they've learned about the process of revitalising their own language or dialect that just give you enough of a different perspective that really shines a light in a new corner of the process for you. So things like that have been very much on my mind. And I suppose the other fantastic byproduct from working on Outlander was all the great people I've met yourselves a part of that, of course. And what's happened is that a market for running tours has opened up with people who want to do something other than just hit the tourist sites, you know, which everyone wants to do the first time, and who can blame them. But, you know, after that, especially people who are big fans of the books and who've got soaked into this idea of there being a, you know, a vast subcultural undercurrent in the Outlander story, which isn't necessarily always detailed by Diana or by the show, but it's obvious to anyone, you know, with half a brain, that there's a huge history and culture to Scotland which might not be apparent on first arrival here. So it's meant that people have come to me who really want to get under the surface and, as I always say, you know, into the bones and under the turf. And to be perfectly honest with you, if I didn't have all the fantastic people who have come to Scottish culture through reading Outlander novels and watching the show, then I quite frankly wouldn't be able to pay the bills. it's as simple as that. I would be punting vegan sandwiches or beers or, you know, whatever in some nice establishment somewhere in Glasgow, you know, but instead of which I'm able to actually take people around Scotland, show them all the things that I love most. So no complaints there.
So you have been able to, or actually, if I understand correctly, it has been your dream and your plan for a long time to not only further the cause of Gaelic, but keep alive this dialect. But also once you have, especially once you've had that experience with the show and then other opportunities have come with that as well, that you have been able to meld not only your passion for the history or your history, your country, the language, but also kind of loop that in to almost, I don't want people to get the wrong idea of what I'm trying to say. And if I say it incorrectly, then I apologize and I will backstep and reword. You've been able to take all of that and make it, combine it with tourism for good. As you said, people want to see the castles, they want to see the locations, especially if it's their first time. And that's great, right? Who doesn't? But once someone has seen it and then they want to see something a little deeper, a little more meaningful.
Yeah, well, but this is it. I mean, you know, when I first hit the States, it was all about bluegrass festivals and Civil War battlefields, you know. Yeah. So it's natural. That's what everybody wants to do. They want to feel like they've hit those points, you know, and you know, tick those things off. It's perfectly natural. But being able to combine the passion with a reorientation of people's priorities in terms of the tourism thing has been really, really, really good. Because although I'm only very small scale, I really run a micro business, to be perfectly honest, you know. It ticks over and no more, which is nice. It's good because I can concentrate on just doing jobs that I really believe in, which is a wonderful position to be in. But the reason why this element of things, the tourism thing, is so important is because if you drive down or drive up the 82, or drive down for that matter, you know, between Glasgow and Fitzwilliam, you will pass through Glenlacotton, which is known in English as Glencoe. And you can't get a parking spot at the viewpoints. And it is absolutely rammed with people from all over the globe, which, on the face of it, wonderful, beautiful. You know, the more different faces and languages and, you know, whatever else you get to experience is always a joy. But nobody has the first idea that there was a culture that existed in that glen who had an absolutely integrated concept of land and language and liberty, you know. They're just like, oh, you know, look at those mountains, snap, 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 and then into the van they go. And so, in a way, obviously very much inadvertently, but the culture and language are being, you know, genuinely, with all due respect, they are being ridden roughshod over. And so to be able to take people around and just obviously allow them to shadow me, do what I do, walk the way I walk in my own country, you know, means that you're kind of a setting out a guidelines for people that they'll talk about. They'll go home and say, well, look, I know you want to go do this, but actually I hired this guy and we got to do this. And one of the great things about taking people around is also that I will always, if I have the chance and we're passing and people are in, then I'll take them in to see local older people, who a lot of whom are quite bored, not doing a heck of a lot with their day, and they love this injection of enthusiasm and wonder, you know, from the other side of the planet, especially expats from the States and Australia and Canada, and who've got Scottish roots, who will come in and regale them with their travels and regale them with stories of home. And, you know, and it's a cross-pollination thing, because our old people are able to then tell them all about the local area in a way that, unless we're right in Central Argyll, I can't even do. So it's reconnecting people who are here because of a passion, and rightfully so, they want to indulge that passion, and that's the right way to live your life. But allowing them to indulge that actually with the real story of the place, the real culture and language, and also with some of the real people.
So you hook them with Scotland, and wanting to do the touristy things.
Yep.
And then you force feed them the culture that they didn't know they wanted.
Exactly.
And they come back. And they come back with a fuller idea of what it really is to be in Scotland.
Yeah, and also feeling completely turned around in some ways as well.
Yeah.
You know. I could have just not said anything for the last 5 minutes and just let Summer say that. That pretty much sums it up. That's absolutely spot on.
Let's get a little more... Absolutely. A little more... Detail.
I've missed the snark. I always miss the snark.
Well, you would have missed the snark. We actually finally, after 5 years, had t-shirts made, and we wore them to our Comic-Con panel. And mine was very boring, and on the back said producer. Uh-huh. And on the back, Summer, what did yours say?
Banter merchant.
Yes.
We thought you'd enjoy that.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, magic. That should be your official title. Well, like, you know what I mean? That should be it.
Exactly.
Forever,
that
forever
came
more.
From you. So she wore it with pride.
Oh, so yes. Really?
You don't remember that?
No, not really, no.
I mean, we may have been drinking when you said it, but you know. Yeah,
well, that's happened.
Okay, so you've told us now like what you like to do and why you like to do it and why it's important to you. Tell us how you develop something. Like someone contacts you and says, "Hey, I want a tour." How does that process work? How do you work with what they want, what you can inject, what you can offer them first? And then second, talk to us about thus far either your most memorable or your favorite, for whatever reason, trip that you've created, mm-hmm. that you've custom built for someone, and how it went.
Right. Well, the process is one of honing over time, you know, because someone who had a trip, say, through Sutherland, Western Ross 2 years ago. Well, just the way things work. One, they'll have paid less, but two, you know, they won't have got the same experience that people who did that trip, just for example, will have done. You know, the last couple of times I've done it, because you build up your contacts, you build up your concept of. You know, how much wholesomeness is accessible with any given, you know, X amount of square miles, depending on where you're going to be, what time of day. You know, when I hit here, will it be lunchtime? Well, roughly, okay, so we've got these kind of choices of where we can go for something to eat. And after lunch, you know, how long is it going to take to get to the digs, get checked in, right, okay, we can fit such and such in. So it's the usual just, you know, working with the time you've got. It's the same in any job, whatever it is you're doing, you've got to, portion out your time. But I kind of have a couple of things. I said, well, I've got three routes that I do with any regularity, and those are, well, let's say four. So there's Argyll, round Mid Argyll, which is the day trip, and we've been out there together with Mandy and done that. And I can't believe you found those bluebells again. That's, I had no idea where to look for those. That was good
that
going.
Was the, besides the mountains, but, Aga, that was the most beautiful and magical thing I have seen in, I don't even know, 15 trips to Scotland ever. Oh, really, my God.
So it's just like, if I want to be able to hear myself speak, I've not to mention the bluebells because it would just be, oh.
Fair enough. Okay, I'll stop. I'll back off.
Oh, brilliant. No, it's all good. It's all good. You know what I mean? We've hit the spot with that one, obviously. So we'll go around Argyll for the day, Auchendrayne Township, Dunad, Fort Kilmartin Glen. I've got, obviously, a natural local vested interest in these places, but also I've got certain theories on you know, prehistoric monuments that are maybe a little different from the norm or what have you. So really speaking, what it is, it's about creating a narrative, and every time I go, my narrative gets honed that little bit more, and people, really speaking, get my take of what I think's important. And as we're going along, we fill in the little gaps with other things that we could possibly visit, depending on how the conversation's gone. So if I'm chatting away with somebody after we've left Auchendrayne and they're saying, oh, it was this, this and this that really impressed me about that place, then I'll be thinking, oh, okay, so you were more attracted to the architectural side of things. All right, well, we better try and hit a castle, or we better try and hit an old Highland church. If someone, you know, is really interested in this idea of the passage of time, the fact that Auchendrayne Township has been there in some kind of similar format since possibly even the beginning of the Iron Age, then you're like, oh, they're really into this historicity, this kind of vein of culture going way back. Well, we better hit some prehistoric sites for certain. You know, it's that kind of a thing, and you just gauge it as you go. But really speaking, because most of the time my clients so highly transport, because it's easier for them, it's cheaper for them, it's simpler, and they're best to get a bit of practice with another with a Scottish driver in the passenger seat for when they go further afield and don't have the guidance. You know, we've had our moments with the Americans in the driver's seat on the wrong side of the road and terrorising neighbourhoods and what have you, you know. it's all good fun, you know, but... I tend to do that. And so really speaking, what it means is that I'm just sitting in the passenger seat blethering, you know, just banging my gums about stuff that I think is interesting and important. So I suppose, you know, you could do worse things for a living. So if we span that out a little bit more to Mid Argyll and North Argyll, that tends to be a 2-day trip. And then we'll head over the Corran Ferry or back over through the Corran Ferry, simply because a 7-minute ferry journey is always fun to do across this little narrows. It's not something that many people encounter. And then see North Argyll around to Castle Turham, where the 1715 rising began for Clanranald, which is the most spectacular castle in Scotland, if you ask me. It kicks the arse off of Éilean Donnan. you know, and then the other one would be Wester Ross and Sutherland, right the way up the northwest tip of Scotland and all the way down. And in all of these places, I'm just keeping my kind of my eye on the time and thinking about people that I know along the road who, you know, are sitting reading their paper in the afternoon or having their cup of tea, and they'd be quite happy to have people in, you know, so we can sometimes nip in and visit folk. There's things, little gems that you find at the ends of roads, you know, that unfortunately, I suppose, that you have to have some customer come with you and do it the first time to find out whether it's any use whatsoever. Luckily, we've never been to a bad spot yet, you know, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's whatever, you know. Accommodation, of course, is always a bit of an experiment. I get my clients to book that so that they're just taking care of that directly, rather than me having to juggle these kind of balls as well. I can concentrate on the culture. But of course, sometimes you are experimenting with places that you don't know what they're like. You know, they might be rubbish, they might be dirty, you know, the shower might be broken. What, you know, you just don't know. So it's like anything else. You're just feeling your way and experimenting, and over time you're building up this kind of concept in your mind of what worked and what didn't, and you're honing it. But then that's life, isn't it? You're doing that, and then you pop your clogs just when you started to have the first kind of a clue what on earth you were doing with life, you know? That's how it always seems to me. But finally, then, there's the Western Isles, which, of course, is where you can go and actually still, you know, walk into the Arnold Black House, for instance, or the shop on the main street in Lewis, the Black House, or the shop on the main street in Castle Bay in Barra, and still hear the Scottish Gaelic language spoken naturally amongst the people that are there, because that's their first language and what they're most comfortable in. So that's a great thing to be able to do, because especially for Outlander fans who have got very much enchanted with the language and, you know, its significance to society at that time in the Highlands, which was everything really, you know, because most of them are monolingual Gaels. It's still great to be able to even just be browsing for, you know, a bar of chocolate or a bottle of soda or whatever, and just hear the language spoken behind them. So that's a fantastic thing to still be able to do. And the Western Isles, of course, has such an incredible variety of scenery. Lewis is rich in historic monuments, prehistory, social history because of the black houses and the weaving and all that side of things. Harris is the mountains and beaches, as if you might as well be in Barbados, you know. And then you've got the Uists, which are the beautiful Macher land, which are this dizzying array of wildflowers and seabirds and what have you. And, you know, Flora MacDonald's birthplace, and still a great traditional music scene, fantastic pipers, very friendly, down-to-earth people. And then Barra, it's just a wee jewel at the bottom of the chain. Brilliant for a party and a few drams. And, you know, it's got the castle, Kishamul Castle in the bay there, which you can take a wee boat out to. So I guess that kind of wraps it up for my three main routes. And what I do is just say, look, here's the places I tend to go to. You're telling me you've got 3 days. Well, we could do this in 3 days, or we could do that. You know, what kind of grabs you? But I suppose the main thing, and this is where it's customarily cheeky of me, it's just that I say, well, look, here's what I tend to do, and here's what I think's worthwhile. You're really throwing yourself at my mercy if you can cope with that. If you trust me to show you a good time, then, you know, here's the options.
And how many pubs are on those routes?
Pubs? Was that the voice of the devil who just intervened there? No, I hear you. It's absolutely many pubs. And the most important element of that is that you're waiting to see what your clients are interested in once you settle down in your first location at night. And you're always hoping that they say, okay, so I'd like to go for a dram. Where's good for a dram? You're like, well... Since you brought that up, and that's how that one kind of rolls, you know. But some clients you get just don't drink, or they've you know been heavy in the drink in the past, and they've calmed down, and they don't want to go near it or whatever. So you roll with the blows in that, whatever people want to do. But it's always nice when they say, "Aye," you know. I need to wet my thrapple here, you know.
I doubt any of your tour guides, like tour groups, has said that exact phrase. To wet their thrapple. No one says that.
But I mean, all right, wet their whistle then, whatever. No, do you not say that either?
I would say that being said anyway. More frequently than.
Right, okay.
But yes.
Right, okay then. Yeah. Well, I always have my tin whistle on me so I can dip it in people's pints. Like, and...
Noted.
You're like, no, really.
Drink away from Aga.
It's really a custom here. Let me just dip this.
That's what it is. That's why everybody's got rusty whistles.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ever been to a fancy hotel, like a really nice hotel, and slept on their sheets and in their, like, luxury bedding and just wanted to take that home with you? I know people who have like gone up to the front desk and been like, where do you get these sheets and how do I get them? And who have bought them from the hotel. Well, Brooklinen was started by a husband and wife who didn't think it should be so difficult and expensive to get sheets like that at home. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world, over 20,000 five-star reviews. And based in Brooklyn, they're not your typical New Yorkers. They live in the city that never sleeps, and yet they're committed to bringing you the best sleep ever.
Founded in April 2014 by husband and wife team Vicky and Rich Fullop and the Dog Dukes. Now, their method for bringing us these wonderful sheets was to take out the middleman and keep things personal between them and the customer. From design to manufacturing to customer service and beyond. Their sheets don't just feel great,
but they look great too. They have different colors and materials to choose from. And Summer and I often talk about how we chose very differently, but for a very similar reason. Like, I chose pure white because I had a mixture of some white stuff, some gray stuff, some stripy like stuff with flowers on it. But anything I had, I could mix and match with the white or use all the Brooklinen and go completely white.
And I just went with stripy charcoal because everything else in my bedroom is charcoal. But all of the prints and patterns and solids all go with literally anything you already have, which is such a nice thing to find and definitely an added bonus to their product.
My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get 20% off and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com.
Brooklinen is so sure that you'll love your new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever.
Since you've been doing this either formally or even for friends, say informally, what has been your what's been your most memorable one? One that maybe surprised you because you're the expert here, right? You're saying, okay, they have this much time. They've booked this. This is my overall plan. And then, like you said, you kind of have to watch them, especially the first day or so if it's a longer tour, so you can see what they like, so then you can make sure that you adapt the rest, if time, to what they like, make it extra bespoke. So you're not just like, oh, I have a plan. You're always working on what the next thing is to try and make it their best experience.
Oh, totally, without a shadow of a doubt.
Out of all of this, or as long as you've been doing it, formally or informally, what's been the most amazing experience either on your side, or maybe it's from a guest's point of view?
Well, there was a family that I actually had on, and I've had some brilliant tours this year. I mean, there's not been a single tour where I haven't had an absolute packed load of fun. But there was one particular one where a guy came with his wife and two daughters, and he was just totally, you know, already completely sucked into the whole Gaelic thing entirely because of his roots, and a lot of his people seem to have come from Argyll. And he said, I want to do as Gaelic a tour as I could possibly do. Where could we go? You know, what would you recommend if we went for a tour through Argyll? Because I know that's your home area and the place you know best. What would you recommend doing, you know, to make it as Gaelic, culturally, as humanly possible? So I had a real think about that one. And what I did was, in each place that we went to, I said, look, how do you feel about having a £50 bung in your pocket for each day that we could give to, although I'm local to Argyll, you know, raised in Argyll, you know, there are people who will know bits of it better than I do, you know, out with the kind of Cowl and Mithergale area. So how would you feel about having a £50 bung for each of these people who could spend a couple of hours with us then and really take you hyper local? And he was like, I'm absolutely up for that. So what we did in each place we went was we had a bung and we gave it to a person who was fluent Gaelic speaker and who knew the history of the area. And so for 2 hours, you know, I mean, I was sort of getting a tour as well, you know. They would take us out and really get absolutely under the turf with it, and that lasted 4 days. And then towards the end, I didn't have anything on, and we were staying in this farmhouse, and it was possible to get another night. And they went, look, could we possibly square you another night? And I was like, sure, you know, why not? I don't have anything on, you know. And every night after we got back to our accommodation, we would settle down with a dram, and the guy was a fantastic chef. So it would be home-cooked food, and I would be singing, storytelling round the fire, log fire, two lovely daughters, just wee kiddos, you know, so much fun, great kids, you know, and just really great people, really organic kind of outlook and mindset, you know, back to the kind of backwards kind of people, a bit like myself. And I felt by the end of it, we visited the Isle of Arran, we were in North Kintyre, we went right through Mithergyle. We went up to the top of Dunad. We went over to the Isle of Lismore and spent a night there and spent one day walking through the whole island, you know, and the weather was almost excellent the entire time. This was April in Scotland, so we really didn't get on too badly. And I must say that it was one of those times where I felt like the family sort of left enriched, but I also left their company enriched, as I do with many, many, many of my clients, especially ones I have for a longer period of time, which is especially there because the fella, you know, his outlook was very cultural in a spiritual sort of way. And he has a lot of vivid Gaelic dreams, even though he doesn't speak it fluently, you know, about themes of Scottish, you know, and Irish mythology. And, you know, so there was that sort of intensity to it that he brought, which teamed up beautifully with mine. And just such a quiet and decent, well-mannered fella and lovely wife and two kids as well. So I've kind of tore the arse out of describing that one, but you did ask and it really was quite special. So that was about a year and a half ago. Really, really, really good to it.
Obviously, you're always doing something with Gaelic, but are you still offering Gaelic tutoring?
Not really. I basically don't have the time. I have one student at the moment who... she is partially sighted, and I'm tutoring her because she finds it very difficult to find a solution that suits her. So we go out and, you know, we wander around and we get her, you know, touching plants and trees and, you know, petting dogs and all these kind of things while we're out in the park or whatever, and get her kind of learn how to describe what she's doing. And she can see enough that she can make out the colours and that kind of a thing. So we get her talking about colours and hues and the texture of things. And, you know, and she's doing really well. But I only took her on because she didn't seem to have any other option. So I really felt that it was important because she was, you know, heading for blind, that it was really important to give her an option, because it felt like maybe other people, not that they'd let her down, but they maybe just hadn't, you know, weren't sure how to approach that. So that's the only student that I currently, well, I've got another student who's a long-term student of mine, who's actually a very high-ranking US diplomat, who has massive Scottish heritage and mostly in Argyll, who's been coming to me off and on. But, you know, with obviously things as they are politically in the world at the moment, she's got her work cut out for her. So, you know, the Gaelic's kind of taken a back seat, shall we say, in the last year and a half or so. But, yeah, so that's the only people I actually have at the moment who are kind of very special cases. So I don't, it just tends to be just absolutely purely a time thing. I don't really have time to take on students.
So you're predominantly doing all of your work, quite frankly, can come under your consultancy, whether it's touring, whether it's language work.
Totally.
Yeah. So which, when I ask about the consultancy, obviously it's very broad. It's very broad. But if someone wanted to contact you or wants to find out about fashioning a tour, how do they do that? Do they contact you via your Facebook page?
Yeah, it's Facebook, Twitter, or sometimes they just get to the site through a Google search. And I haven't plucked out the guts to kind of get myself a TripAdvisor account yet. You know, I'm like, oh, I don't know whether I want to leave myself open to that, you know, but we'll see. I'll need to do it eventually. But either the website or the Facebook or Twitter. I mean, I'm terribly lazy with it, to be perfectly honest, because I've got so much other, voluntary work going on. I find myself just sticking out a couple of posts per year, and it tends to be through word of mouth and shares on those that I tend to get enough custom to pay the bills through the year. But yeah, someone would contact me and they would say, look, we're coming to Scotland in July. We want to do X, Y, Z. And normally they say we want to hit some Outlander sites, and I'm like, oh, sorry, you need to go elsewhere to do that, because I like to just kind of keep those two areas separate, you know. I don't want to be the Outlander guy who is constantly caught hanging around Outlander sites. I don't know. There's just something uncool about that. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I just, you know, I totally dig that people want to go there. I would do too if I got somewhere and, you know, a show that I loved was filmed in a place. I would go want to check out the sets, of course. But for me, as having worked on the show already, I'm like, I don't really want to, you know, I don't want to mix those two things together. I quite like the distinctness there. So I kind of just say, well, hey, you know, there's these two or three companies that I have worked with in the past who are really good. So maybe you want to go and hit them up for the Outlander side of things. And, you know, here's what I can provide. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, probably anything up to about half of the inquiries don't go anywhere because people are maybe looking for that quite touristy kind of first time experience, which is definitely not something that I'm going to be able to provide. So, you know, but it, as I say, I tend to get pretty much enough to keep me going just through a few posts. You know, I need to get more proactive about it so I can eventually take on staff, because that would be lovely, wouldn't it? You know, to be able to pass the skills on and train people up, you know. That is a dream, but I'll have to get my arse in gear, as we say, and, you know.
Well, speaking of other things or reaching out or putting more not fuel, putting more irons in the fire. We haven't spoken about music yet, but that is something that is also a part of your life. Tell us about, so you're a polyglot, you own your own consultancy, you do tours, and even though it's minimal at the moment because of all the things you're doing, you do, and you have been a Gaelic teacher, a Gaelic tutor, Gaelic historian, kind of, you know, in figuring out the history and the language. So what have you done most recently musically? And tell, and again, in case someone is new to you and new to our show, what do you do musically? What do you love about music?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of ways that I look at music that are quite kind of distinct. One of which is the music of my culture, which to me is really just part of, you know, it's inseparable from the language, and it's inseparable from my feelings about who I am, where I fit into the world, and my kids and what have you. So that's all just wrapped up in the consultancy and the language revival and bringing up Gaelic-speaking children, etc., etc. But the other side of the music thing, it's almost like what I said about keeping my tours and my Outlander work separate. It's exactly the same thing with the musical thing, in the sense that the other element of my music is quite literally country Americana. It's you know, North American style songwriting and songsmithery and lyric writing. And that's what I was doing before I rediscovered my own culture. You know, a lot of Scottish people kind of get by like anyone else. You know, where rock and roll saves your soul, as the cliche goes, because you don't have your own culture and you're not encouraged to pursue your own culture. So that's what I'd been doing. I've been playing in bands for years when I picked up the Gaelic language about 15 years back, you know. So what I'm up to at the moment is kind of getting back into the sort of thing that I was doing before my twins came on the scene, because when they came on the scene, it was, well, something's got to give. And it, unfortunately, at that stage, there wasn't any contest. It was going to have to be the music, you know. Not that I was going to stop playing guitar or writing songs, but, you know, there was no way I was going to be able to pursue rehearsing and writing with a band. So having kind of picked that back up again over the last, really, 3 years since the sort of intense, you know, everyday work with Outlander calmed down, it's been working with my friend Noel, who is a superlative lyric writer, incredibly imaginative, creative thinker and lyric writer. He's been sending me lyrics over that I've put music to. So we've got more or less about 3 albums worth written, about 30 songs probably. And that's on top of another, you know, 100 we've probably done over the years. And the first 10 of which... we're releasing under the moniker of Winterface, and the album will be self-titled, and we are about 2/3 of the way through the recording process for that album. We've got all the drums, bass, most of the guitars down, and we've got our guide vocals down. So we're just taking the tracks at the moment and kind of listening over and working out what else is still to be added. But it's all very in kind of, I guess you would say that it sounds like it belongs to 1967 to 74 or something like that, you know. It's all classic North American sounding rock and roll, country, bits and pieces of blues, soul, that kind of a thing. And what I was saying is, I guess I kind of pursue that in a way because it's not connected to anything else that I do. I guess it is a genuine escape. You know, escape over to Knowles and sit and have a few cans of cider and, you know, play some rock and roll. Distract myself from all the pressing concerns.
What is a winter face?
What is it?
I mean, it's right. What is a winter? Because it's very evocative. It could be many things.
No, but here's what it is, right? It's an old bearded fella who's just washed his face, forgotten to dry it, and stepped out into the Alaskan winter, and then suddenly it just freezes up. And it's all icicles, and that is definitely a winter face. That's what it is. But you know, the way the name actually came up is quite literally because I just thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool to put a W in front of interface, and then you go winter face. And I was just like, I don't care what my next band is, it's getting called Winterface. So when Noel was like, we're going to call this band, and he was coming up with all sorts of mad ideas, some of which are great, some of which were ridiculous, you know, as you do. And then I went, look man, I'm sorry, but I decided the next time I was in a band it was going to be called Winterface. And he just took a second, he's like, Winterface, that rolls right off the tongue. That's really easily remembered. And he's like, if we could mess about for eternity trying to find a better name and probably not find one. So sod it, let's just go with that.
It's kind of, it seems like that would lend itself to a specific style of music.
Uh-huh.
Winterface.
Right. What kind of music?
I don't know, but I don't know if I would have gone with 60s North American country. It sounds kind of punk rock.
Do you think so? Right,
a little bit.
Well, when you guys, you said you're working on it, you've completed part of the album, correct?
Yeah.
Or part of the instrumentation.
We've laid down all the basic instrumentation, and it's just a case of whatever overdubs are required. We're going to need some piano, a little bit of honky-tonk upright piano, one of the blues tracks, you know, some extra vocals, harmonies and things. The odd second guitar part. I've laid down all the solos, guitar solos. Well, there's only three, but I put them down as well. So it is, and then after that, it'll just be a case of mixing it and then going somewhere decent to master it. So that's to bring all the tracks up to the same level, to tidy it up, to get rid of any extraneous noise, to make the tracks kind of radio worthy, I guess. And all being well, if the bloody embassy in London ever gets back to me, you know. All being well, we should be hitting the West Coast and catching up with your good selves in November.
Oh my goodness. Actually, I was just about to ask, once the album's done, do you plan on performing in the US?
Yeah, as I say, we're just waiting on the applications coming through. They've been asking for some more information and, you know, the whole thing's a bit of a drag. So we're looking forward to just getting that side of things, the bureaucratic side of things out the road. Hopefully that will be sorted soon. And then, because we do have dates, but we don't want to go overboard trying to promote anything until the folks are done with what they need to do down in London. So we just need to see how that goes, and hopefully it's going to work out. If it doesn't, a lot of people have contributed to the application, everything so far. So, and if it didn't work out, we didn't come over, then we just need to work out a whole lot of really cool goodies, like free signed copies of the album and all that stuff for the people who contributed so far, and various other perks and goodness knows what. So people will be repaid for their fantastic support so far, no matter what. But hey, we're hoping it just works out. It should be fine.
Did you know? I don't know if you knew. Season 4 starts in November as well.
All right. Aye, that rings. Yeah, of course it does. Aye. do we have an actual date for it?
Yeah, it was kind of an oopsie date. Fourth. And then they oopsie confirmed it. Yeah, November 4th.
Of course. So it is, because that's Noel's birthday as well.
Ah.
Yeah. So, but we're going to be in Seattle, I think, first. Yeah. So, oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
If you're in our neck of the woods in November, then yeah, you may have, well, you may have, whether or not the show had started at that time, I don't think it matters. I just think it's interesting that out of all the months of the year it starts, no matter when you're here, if you're in our neck of the woods, I think there are some people locally who are going to want to see you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, we're actually, we're probably going to be organizing the, well, I mean, it's if it all comes through, then the place, the gig will be at on your rough neck of the woods on the West Coast. It will be in a large flat in San Fran, which is a huge kind of studio space, which is basically as big as a small venue.
Oh, wow.
So that's my friend Valerie's place. She's saying she's gonna have it there. So yeah, there'll be plenty of potential for folk to come along and get involved. Be a good gig, and there will be probably extremely healthy snacks.
Oh, I bet. So okay, so excellent. So you've been busy since, well, since even before you came on board with started working as a Gaelic consultant for the show. But you've had a mission, you've gone a long way toward that mission and helped with various vehicles, helped bring spotlight onto the language and its history and its importance and the danger it's in. And and have been able to loop that in with offering more in-depth specialized tours to people who want that.
A more discerning visitor. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And you've updated us a little bit on kind of where your upcoming album is. Now, do people know that you also do? And sometimes I'm guessing you might not be able to talk about them all, but since it was ours, I don't mind bringing it up. You also do The Odd Appearance. That's not, you know, that's not, it's Gaelic related, but you're not hired to go teach someone, but it's
sure.
It's kind of a mélange of all of it. You do a little, you do Gaelic, you speak Gaelic, you sing in Gaelic or you sing in English, and you tell stories. So tell us about, kind of in the spirit of the An Ghealbhán that you used to do, tell us about some of the appearances that you do or that you're available for.
Well, I mean, for instance, myself and Gila Brigia Mac Gila Vool, who was Gwil and the Bard in episode 3 in season 1, we're doing a pre-recorded Q&A for the Outlander gathering in North Carolina towards the end of September. They're doing like a Fraser's Ridge homecoming type thing. It's like a really nice website. It looks very cool. And myself and Gila Brigia are doing a little kind of Q&A thing for that, maybe a wee song at the end or whatever. So that's just a little pre-recorded video slot, for instance. I also did a Q&A for the New Zealand, the Kiwi Outlanders as well, which was really cool. I was able to send them the files over that were then broadcast at their gathering. One of my favourite things ever was coming over to Quebec in 2015 for the Outlandish gathering there. That was a terrific experience. Great to be able to visit that part of the world as well, and made so many good friends. And you know, between that and touring down the east coast of the States, very kind of informally, you know, just hanging about with people and going to parties and stuff, you know, and doing the same on the west coast, you know, it's been a tremendous thing for me to be able to get to know the people in North America so well as you'll ever do, considering there's whatever, you know, 400 million of them all together, you know, across the continent, you know. But, you know, you just get a much more of a snapshot. Me, certainly personally, I get much more of a window and an insight into how people think and how people have fun and what life's like and that than I ever thought I would. So these things are brilliant when they're overseas, but they also take place here as well. Sometimes I'll get asked to come along to a wee dinner that's happening over in Edinburgh, you know, and I'll do just a kind of an informal Q&A for that, you know, and maybe a bit of singing and what have you. I did ScotCon, of course, which, contrary to popular belief, was you know, a brilliant idea, and I was very glad to be involved in it. I had a great time there as well. So, you know, on this side of the water, there's the occasional things. But I guess with Scottish culture not being quite as exotic here, perhaps. The Outlander thing hasn't taken off here the way it has, you know, in the States or Canada, Australia. So in terms of appearances here, I don't do quite as much as I reckon I probably would do if I was based in North America. Do you know what I mean? What I tend to do here more of is more kind of cultural stuff rather than things that are kind of oriented towards the show.
To describe what I was not hinting at, but what I was referring to earlier, in case, again, in case our listener is new and didn't know about our trip, we took a trip. We led some
outlanders. You see, I'm forgetting, of course, that some photo. I'm talking to you, so I'm thinking there's no point in mentioning our thing we did in May because we were all there. Then, of course, no. Not everybody's going to realize that, you know.
That's okay. And you didn't have to. I just wanted to say the reason it, like, my question and my prompting may have seemed really odd. So basically, we had Agav and Gilbert Ige, actually, as two of our special guests to appear at our leaving dinner for the tour that we had, Outlander fan inspired tour of Scotland in May of this year. And at our leaving dinner, we had, as I said, the two of them, and they both spoke, sang, told stories. And I think, you know, Agav, I gotta say, whenever we in our little private, we have a private Facebook group for all of our alumni, we just, you know, we just talk about it. We've grown, you know, gotten to know so many of them. And every once in a while, they just, it's still, whenever we kind of reminisce, it is still, other than the fact that I still can't get over, like, they never stopped pouring my wine. Other than that,
I never stopped drinking your wine.
And then right. I never stopped drinking everybody's wine.
you and Ailey, oh my God. But yeah, okay, that was great. Don't get me wrong. And having you guys on either side of us, like, you know, doing your thing. It was, I mean, yeah. I know you say it as part of slang, but that was absolute magic. That was magic.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that gets me like shivers, besides the, I thought we were done drinking at dinner, and then they're like, "Hey, go into the drawing room."
Besides, when you woke up in a gutter, having drank three bottles of wine and were shivering,
right? And so they're like, "Okay, we'd like to invite you into the drawing room." And I was like, "Oh, that's cute." So I go into this drawing room, and then we look to the right, and there's basically an open bar. I'm like, "Are you kidding me?"
That wasn't bad.
I'm not trying to like push up and pimp the alcohol, although that was impressive. It was this experience. It was the pure magic. And then as the whomever opened the doors and said, okay, you know, the drawing room is now open for our guests, basically. And we all...
Shall we retire to the drawing room, yes, darlings?
Exactly. So the whole party of this 26 plus guests plus others go into this drawing room and like pretty much everybody finds some place to sit or whatever. And it could be romantic, but it's like, again, like 30 plus of us. So no. But it was, everyone had a drink. Everyone had something. And then Agav, like, basically, and I mean this in a very good way, basically holds court in that drawing room. And you were just telling stories. And that to me, although the dinner was magic, that to me, like, I could cry how magic that drawing room was. It was...
I think you may actually have done, you know, which would only kick me off right enough, you know. But I think you forgot. Did you mention the fact that this was the Royal Yacht down at the harbour in Edinburgh as well? So it wasn't just any old drawing room. We were in a boat.
Fair enough. Sorry. We were on a yacht.
Yeah.
There is that.
That's it. Yeah, just a small detail, but, you know, one that's just nevertheless worth bringing up, you know.
No. Sorry, yes. I wasn't trying to hide it. I just was... Yeah, not thinking. But yeah, so obviously there's the people.
One of the rarest occasions where, you know, I've emerged into the reception area of any venue and had someone turn around to me and actually say, "Champagne, sir."
And then
now, my favorite moment of the evening was one of our guests. Jane, oh, when she came, we'd done our little tour around, and we'd come back into the main area where they were still serving champagne, and Agave had just arrived. And I walked up and I was like, Agave, and I gave him a hug. And all of a sudden, Jane comes up behind me and she goes, "Oh my God, is that the Gaelic guy?" And I
is that the lady that ended up in tears?
Yeah,
just
probably.
For the excitement of seeing me. So. That was the sweetest thing ever. I loved meeting her. She was lovely.
He was like, "I'm crying, y'all."
Oh, brilliant. Oh, the accent takes nothing away from it. Love it. Love it.
Oh, my goodness. Wasn't it? And I know some of us, or most of us, were a little bit in our cups, but it was on a yacht. Don't get me wrong. And a really nice yacht at that. But that drawing room, I think, was honestly, I looked up. I felt like it was an out of body experience because you were chatting. We're talking, telling a story, and we were all just kind of, you know, people were sitting there listening and drinking and everything. And I was like, wait, and I knew the evening was literally about to end. So I was really trying to soak up every last moment. And I was just like, are we really here right now? Is this really?
I tell you, that's really totally. It was quite surreal. What was even more surreal for me was when I looked up at one point and thought, is Gilly Bridges really here right now? And he wasn't. He'd left and just hadn't told me. Oh, cheers.
Oh,
He'd slipped out the back, Jack. Well, I'm holding court and getting decidedly more, three or more sheets to the wind, but nah, classic evening. Classic, classic.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was, it was indeed a very... So yeah, the reason I bring up all of that as we come near to close is that you do so much, and even if you may not do them every single weekend, you do so many things on your own, and then you're hired for these types of events. So it's so, I wouldn't say random, but it's so many things you do are so unique to that. Like whatever tour you do for that client, you may do the area again, you may go to the same pubs again, but whatever you do and you're involved in, it's truly one off.
Totally. I would agree with that, because with Scotland as well, you know, at the end of the day, we've got such an undulating coastline, we've got such undulating weather, so no trip's ever going to be the same twice. Do you know what I mean? And that's definitely the beauty of it, you know? That's the beauty of it until you're caught in the pishing rain, but nah. It's no bad, no bad. I'm not in a bad place at all. It's all grist to a very much appreciated mill, you know, where things are at the moment.
Well, I think that is a good note to close on. And we will have you back, because we said that we'd update our listeners again once you and your co-pilot for the album.
Indeed.
Okay, yep. So once that's done and once you've gotten news from the South, then even if you don't have news from the South by the time the album is done, obviously we'll have you back. But once if it's the same time, great. If not, we'll just promote the heck out of it once you've heard from the South.
So, that would be lovely, but you know, we could definitely do a kind of a wee thing where we come along and premiere a couple of tracks or something, you know, for the first time.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so yeah, so let us know, and we will chat again likely this fall to talk more about and play some of your tracks.
That sounds like a good plan to me,
We look forward to having you back.
Alrighty, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure as always.
Absolutely, always. And if anyone wants to contact you for information about Gaelic, about maybe how to find someone, Gaelic history, whatever it is, all the Gaelic tours, bespoke tours.
Especially the tours, yeah, absolutely.
Especially the tours. Then it's best if they go to scottishgaelic.scot. Is that correct?
Yeah, or hit me up at Gaelic Consultant with one C in the middle on Twitter or Facebook.
Oh, yes. Yes. So Twitter and Facebook at Gaelic Consultant, one C in the middle. And Facebook also, I guess that's your Gaelic Consultant, one C also goes to the Scottish Gaelic Conservancy.
Yeah, that's it for Twitter and Facebook. It's the same address, which is nice and neat. So.
Oh, good. No, that's important. It's good to keep it consistent. And of course, his website. So thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to share this.
Thank you very much.
And of course, to speak with you again.
Smashing. Alrighty. Well, look after yourselves. I'll catch you with you soon.
You too. Okay. All right. We'll speak soon.
Cheers.
Okay.
Right. See you later on. Cheerio. Cheerio.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.